I recall all too well the experiences of chronic fatigue that early on were quite disorientating and very painful. They felt like very dark days and a very hard place to be in, and I always said I'd never want to go back there. But I do recall the muscle twisting and as if my bones were being ripped apart at each joint, and the way in which my head was just a fuzz and a mess. I felt a bit like a blob at times. But those nights where I was so in pain that I couldn't sleep and simply had to get up and was exhausted, and it was a vicious cycle. I remember sitting and realising that I could either feel sorry for myself and become very frustrated and bitter and angry at the end of it all, with life, universe and everything, and everyone perhaps. And yet it was in the Psalms, when I started to manage to dig around in them, that I saw the many voices from joy and exuberant praise, and discovered the suffering and painful and silent voice. Alongside all the medical help that I received, in my very soul and for faith's sake, I discovered that anatomy of the soul that Calvin talks about in these Psalms, and it allowed me to find a voice in prayer. My hope is that in these days, wherever you find yourself, however dark or grey or blue, that they might be encouraged to discover the rich depth in these Psalms for yourself, and that you find your voice. The Psalms are never about merely going through the motions. They deal in extremes of dark despair, loneliness, abandonment, helplessness, grief, anger, and hurt in relationship with other people, or that inner turmoil, all of that laid out before God in relationship with Him. And the Psalms assume that when we talk to God, you don't need to hold back, you don't need to be restrained about how you actually feel about the circumstances and the mess and the chaos and rawness of how you are in the midst of all these things. Sometimes we just need to say it as it is. And in Psalm 22, that's where we jump right in. Very common, familiar words, perhaps mindful of Jesus on the cross when he used them. My God, why have you forsaken me? That's a very stark starting point. Forsakenness. To be left, deserted, neglected, abandoned. That's how it felt. And so crying out, the psalmist puts it before God. He says, why? Why so far, remote and distant from saving me, from deliverance? And indeed, it also has that sense of someone's welfare, and we might say well-being. And finally, he talks about the words of my groaning, the cry of distress, also that sense of roaring it out. There's a real sense here of the sheer hurt and pain that's going on in their life. Groaning is often connected with pain and sickness and oppression and death in Scripture. Groaning too, though, is accompanied with a longing. It's like, oh, please let it end. And hence, the psalmist says, I cry out for help. And here, the psalm starts with what God has done or not done. Why have you forsaken me? Why are you so far from helping me? From the words of my groaning, oh my God, I cry by day, but you do not answer, and by night, but find no rest. The psalm also laments what other people have done to him, to us, insofar as that feels to be the problem. So he says, all who see me mock me. He talks about company of evildoers encircling him. And in fact, he uses the image of bulls encircling and goring and so on. But it also draws us to acknowledge how we honestly feel in ourselves and how we might see ourselves at that point. He actually says that I am a worm and not a human being, scorned by men, despised by people. And then he says he's poured out like water and on through to his mouth dried up. Verse 14, I think, really stands out for me anyway, capturing and adding to that sense of the emotiveness and the picture he has here of where he finds himself, poured out like water, bones out of joint, and a heart melted in the midst of their very gut or belly. These are powerful images. Life poured out, we sometimes talk about, that emptying sense, and suggesting that life's kind of ebbing away and falling apart and it's uncontrollable. Out of joint is the other way, and I know, having dislocated my shoulder a couple of times, it's a painful thing, and the least little movement brings an agony to it. So dislocation. And then the heart and gut is not an association that we might make, but for the psalmist, the belly, the gut, the intestine is the seat of the emotions, and so his heart has melted like wax. And it feels right at the very core in his very stomach. And then in verse 15, it talks about the dried up bones. Bones is an image of vigour in scripture. And so it's like life is withering away. And his tongue stuck to his palate is about thirst, of course, perhaps. But it's reckoned by some commentators that it's more an image here of that inability to speak. It's like it's stuck to the roof of his mouth. He just can't say anything else. Proverbs 17 verse 22 may help here in terms of, it talks about a broken spirit dries the bones. Here is truly a hard place then that he sits in. But the psalmist also skillfully weaves through this lament another strong thread. And it's the remembrance of firstly who God is. In verse 3 he says, "You're the Holy One who inhabits the praise of Israel." It's a picture of God who sits and abides and remains in the midst of his people and who rules there and accepts and takes up the praise of his people. It's like, God, this is who you are. And also then he moves on to say about how God's deeds in the past and how he trusts in these and what God has done, God's faithfulness. We know you were there for our ancestors, he says. They cried out and you rescued them. They trusted in you and were not disappointed. There's a sense of, so come on, get going, help me here. But the psalm holds together these truths about God that the psalmist, in a sense, is still committed to living by, even in the hardships and the experience of abandonment and loss that are currently his experience. One Old Testament scholar has said it's object of the psalm is to summon God away from the throne, from the high place, the heavenly place, back into human life, which is so hurtful and raw. In other words, to mobilize God into some form of action and deliverance. In fact, the psalmist insists on looking at the facts in the face and holds them and weaves them together, as I've said throughout, facts about God and facts about the experience. And it alternates that sense of abandonment and insecurity and isolation that are so poignant with the remembrance of this God who will act, who will come and deliver on the other side of this. And I think that's important for us to be mindful of and reflect upon, because we can get stuck either end of this in some way, not owning our pain or grief because it's felt to threaten our faith and our worldview. After all, to be a good Christian, you need to be joyful and you've got to have life altogether. And equally, there's the flip side, where we can have that huge chip on our shoulder as a result and become hard-hearted. Psalm 22 as a lament shows us that while this prayer arises out of darkness and near hopelessness, in one way or another, it reaches out in hope. In faith, the psalm is fervent and direct, expecting God to act. It simply pleads, "Don't be far away. Don't be far away. Come to my help. Deliver my soul and save me." What prayer asks for is to be heard and delivered. How God effects that deliverance is never stated. It's hopeful, I believe. And yet at the end, it feels like things have shifted for the psalmist and that they themselves are hopeful. Certainly, they'll not settle until they get an answer and find deliverance, as they seem to be able to see a new day. Verse 22, they are saying, "Here is the story. that I'll tell my friends when they come to worship, to offer praise and adore you. And listen to this. Here then, he says, this God, our God, has never let you down, never looked the other way when you were right down in the depths. He hasn't hidden from you, but has listened to our cry for help. God's faithfulness is at last recognised again. And note, it's not an abstract idea, but a fact. God acts, and God will act, and God will save. Something happens and changes and transforms. Deliverance is a reality. And in turn, this is something to shout out about and let everyone present know about this faithfulness of God, and indeed to future generations. The last verse says, verse 31, and proclaim this deliverance to a people yet unborn, saying that he has done it. He has done it. Isn't that wonderful? What a journey this psalm takes, and what a fabric it weaves. So I'd like to invite you to reflect on this psalm and do something in response. The psalms, I believe, actually stretch us as they show us what things can be said that we never thought that we could see in prayer. They are, in fact, poetry. And often in scripture, it's the poetry that cuts through everything else. That's why prophets are like poets. That's why in history, poets have been the subversive ones with different songs that undermine and cause a shift that's truly radical. So I invite you to try and write out your prayer and take some time over it as you go through each portion, and then make it your heartfelt prayer. I've attached a document that outlines a general structure, a framework, if you like, for how to put this together. I hope it's helpful, and that you too, wherever you find yourself, may know the faithfulness of God.